Radio, a show that features the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Kay Patek. Election Day, November the 4th, is just around the corner, and people are paying close attention to local races as they decide how to cast their ballot. KHOI has committed itself to bringing you a fair and impartial radio debate between candidates. We've heard frustration from more than one candidate that other forums have not offered them the freedom to contest their opponents' claims. This is what we aim to do here. Today we feature the four candidates vying for the two county supervisor seats. But first, let me welcome our moderator, Linda Merkin. Welcome, Linda.
Thanks, Kay. I'm glad to be here.
Linda is a lifelong resident of Story County, with a background in government and experience with creating impartial formats for debates. Thank you for agreeing to serve as moderator, Linda. I'll turn this over to you now.
Our four candidates for county supervisor are here with us today. William Cleese, a Republican challenger, Loris Olson, an independent challenger, Rick Sanders, a Republican incumbent, and Paul Toot, a Democrat incumbent. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We'll start with opening statements. Each of you will have 90 seconds to introduce yourself to the listening audience. First, to Ms. Olson, the independent challenger. Please describe your experience and accomplishments and how they relate to the job you seek.
Good morning. I'm Loris Olson. I have 16 years' experience in business management, including 5 years in two Fortune 500 companies and 8 as a small, very small business owner. I have 20 years' experience researching, analyzing, and writing about local government, 10 of it right here in Story County. And in the last 2 years, I've become somewhat of a specialist in Story County government, attending over 250 county-related meetings and studying 1,000 documents and reports. I am also a respected advocate for fair and open government. I currently sit on the Community and Family Resources 8 County Board of Directors and the Youth and Shelter Services Public Policy Board. I'm a member of the Story County Juvenile Justice Committee, the Story County Affordable Housing Coalition, and the Story County Transportation Coalition. I've also, since 2002, been an enthusiastic volunteer with groups, especially those that strive for inclusion and quality of life for all our residents. I've held leadership positions in several local and statewide nonprofit organizations, am a certified national trainer for character counts, and am a graduate of the Ames Chamber of Commerce Leadership Ames program.
Thank you. Now we'll hear from Mr. Cleese, the Republican challenger.
Good morning, everyone. My name's William. I'm a graduating senior at Iowa State University with a double major in criminology and political science. Through my work history, I currently am employed as an emergency medical technician, and I work with a private security agency through the Iowa DPS in West Des Moines. Both, I would say, are relevant to qualifications as a supervisor. I acted as the second shift sergeant for approximately 2 years at my job, where it was my responsibility to manage the duties of approximately 25 people. That's the essence of a supervisor job, to ensure that everything moves forward as it is supposed to and without incident. As an EMT, I've become very accustomed to handling people at their worst and at their best. I think that's relevant. You need a very close relationship, an intimate relationship even, with your constituency. And that's something I think has often been lost in our current form of politics, that government has become an entity separate from the people they represent. Third of all, I am a student at ISU. It's a very large organization. A large portion of the population of Story County is comprised of them. And I think that that population would be benefited by representation of one of our own.
Thank you. Now to the incumbents. Mr. Toot, the Democrat incumbent, tell us what Story County voters should know about your service as county supervisor and your accomplishments in this role.
Thank you very much. Thanks for everybody for tuning in so early this morning. My name is Paul Toot. I'm just finishing up my first term here on the Board of Supervisors. I'm a lifelong resident of Story County. My wife, Molly, and I have three children, two twin girls that are at Iowa and Iowa State, and a boy that's a sophomore at Nevada High School. For 30 years, I served the citizens here in Story County as a deputy sheriff with the sheriff's office. Was elected to the board in 2010. I'm very proud of the accomplishments that this board has been able to get done over the past 4 years. We've reduced overall county spending by several million dollars. We've added a similar amount to the county's rainy day fund, if you will. We've been able to reduce the overall county tax levy. And by doing that, we've been able to build some capacity in the county, and we've been able to increase funding to the asset process by about 25%. The asset process serves about 29 or 30 non-for-profit service organizations here in Story County. It's a process that I think that's fairly unique to Story County, and I'm very proud of how that process works. I think we've got a good board that works well together. There's been some turmoil over in the past with different boards of supervisors that haven't worked well for one reason or another. I'm proud, like I said earlier, I'm very proud of the accomplishments of this board, and I'm proud that we've been able to put things together in a bipartisan fashion here in Story County. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sanders, basically the same question. What should Story County voters know about you as county supervisor as they get ready to go to the polls?
Thanks, Linda. First of all, good morning to everybody. Thank you to those of you that are tuning in. This is an important conversation. Thanks to KHOI for hosting this. I am proud of our work as supervisors in Story County. As Paul mentioned a couple times, and Linda, you mentioned as we started, Paul and I happen to reside in different political parties, which today, too many times, seems to mean that you're going to just disagree for the sake of disagreeing. And Paul and I have not done that, along with our partner, Wayne Clinton. And that has led to some outstanding results for the people of Story County. I mean, government matters, and especially local government, really, really matters to our lives and the way we conduct our lives. We did produce the first balanced budget in Story County in more than 25 years after assuming a budget that was more than $6 million out of whack. We did cut actual spending by 14%, but while we cut actual spending by 14%, we also increased some of our priorities, like asset. Paul mentioned we increased our asset process by over 25%. We increased road funding by about 13% and improved efficiency with new equipment and new methods for getting things done. We adopted a comprehensive government restructuring committee and looked at their plan. They had 21 recommendations. We've enacted 15 of those. We're in process in 5, and one of them reside with the people of Story County. Really excited about our conversation today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you all for your statements. We'll now proceed to questions. And to allow all our candidates time to address each question and to rebut the responses of others if they so desire, we've established some fairly short time limits. You'll each have 60 seconds for your answer and 30 seconds for rebuttal or elaboration if you choose to use it. And we will alternate the order of questioning. First question for Mr. Toot. First, both you and Mr. Sanders claim to have cut spending in county government considerably in the past few years, and we just heard some more detail about that. From what departments or services did the majority of the savings come? And were you able to save a large amount of money? How were you able to save a large amount of money without reducing services to Story County residents?
Thanks for the question. It was an interesting process when we sat down with our first budget session with the elected officials and department heads. We were able to realize savings by taking a different look at the budgeting process. Instead of having the department head or the elected official tell us how much money they think they needed for the upcoming fiscal year based on what they had for the previous fiscal year, we asked them to take a look back at the last 3 or 4 years and see how much they'd spent over the last 3 or 4 years and give us a realistic projection on how much money they thought they were going to need, not how much money they wanted. And we always told them that we would be open if the budget ran short. We would be open for conversations for the possibility of a budget amendment. And we've said this before. It came down to discussions over $50 for postage and mailing or office supplies. And every department countywide reduced their overall budget. No one particular department specifically was targeted.
Thank you. Ms. Olson, what are your observations on these spending cuts? Have they hurt Story County services, and if so, how?
No, I do not believe that they have hurt most Story County services. In fact, this is how I was taught to budget in the private sector, and I've been very impressed with this. And I've sat through 2 years of budget hearings, and I think Paul's description is very accurate about getting down to the $50 here and the $100 there. Budgeting is never a perfect process. Where I would like to see some further progress made would have to do with how much real-time analysis as we go through the year. The county ended with $300,000 to the good at the end of this last fiscal year. And because despite the increase in asset funding, there is there's always a greater need. I would have liked to have seen some of that money been available for the asset agencies who are facing their own budget challenges. Instead, a lot of the money went to pay for equipment for the county departments that had already been budgeted into this fiscal year. So they kind of moved it up. Conversely, then, this budget, after it was approved for this fiscal year, the supervisors did come back and add $2 million more to the budget. So it's $43 million. I really feel like I could have 10 more seconds. However, most of that money came through.
Thank you, Ms. Olson.
From the previous year.
Okay. Mr. Cleese, your reflections on the county budget.
Well, as a newcomer, all I can really speak to is that the essence of budgeting is to not expend more than you have. That's fairly simple. Everyone might seem to think that's an overly simplified response. However, I would argue that that is all that can be done. A lot of people, I know a common, I guess, complaint is that is often they feel at the expense of many necessary services to the county. However, I would argue that if you are going into debt, you know, insolvency is not the appropriate response to a need for services in a county. Additionally, if appropriation of funds is correct, the best way to increase that is to create an environment that is conducive to both population and job growth. That will, in turn, create more money. A county that is unable to meet its own debts is not ever going to meet those requirements. So from what I see, I like what has been done. I would be absolutely supportive of it, and that's what would continue, to not spend more than you make.
Thank you. Mr. Sanders?
Yeah, thank you so much. Great conversation, Loris. I'm so appreciative of your analysis of what we've gone through. It has been really, really refreshing. I think when Paul and I undertook this process, we kind of caught some of our department heads and elected officials off guard. And so the first year was really kind of interesting when we did debate over $50 in postage and things of that nature. Loris mentions $2 million that rolled onto this year's budget. And I just want to underscore something she said at the end. That's most of that is $2 million that was budgeted for last year that for whatever reason the projects didn't get completed. A lot of construction projects, a huge majority of it is the Dakins Lake work that's going on, and so it necessitated it rolling onto this year's budget when it didn't get expended in the last year. Second thing I'll say about having some residual finances at the end of the year is our ending fund balance was all the way down to about $6 million, which is not enough. That's our rainy day fund. And we have increased that to about $13 million, which is about right for county government to be able to operate. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is about infrastructure. According to the Story County Engineer, one quarter of the 274 bridges in Story County are not up to federal standards. Several bridges have been closed because they need repair. I've been told that the amount of money available at the local level does not even begin to touch the amount needed to repair them. William Cleese, what steps would you take to begin fixing this problem?
What I understand that is a problem that's not unique just to Story County, but is also a statewide issue. In terms of appropriation of funds, again, I am not sure what has been allocated for roadway, but if it is insufficient to handle it, we're going to have to create more somewhere. One of my proposed solutions would be to use some of the TIF funds from the wind towers that are going up. Obviously, that currently has been going to the education system. However, if it were removed and placed towards something else, the state would be willing to backfill the lack of funds for the school system, and I think that could be very well used to better our infrastructure. Public works projects are going to be one of the best ways to create a solid economy. It's going to be the best ways to make the community attractive to new inhabitants. And I'd say that would be probably the best way to start about going getting some additional finances.
Mr. Sanders, could you explain the situation to our listeners? And specifically, how is it that our county's found itself in this predicament? Could any of the money the current board of supervisors cut from the budget have been used for bridge repair? Would it have been enough? And how would you fix the problem?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
The Board of Supervisors is largely empowered to spend dollars where they see fit. The problem resides with federal funding and state funding not meeting the challenge. Paul and I were in a meeting the other day with our engineer and asked if under current funding levels, how long would it take us to replace all the bridges in Story County? And we were told 150 years. Well, bridges don't last 150 years. The reality is this is a funding problem that has to have an answer, and the answer is pretty simple. You can either close bridges and not have as many in Story County. You can have the state do something with their funding formula, which is the gas tax or something along those lines, or you can have the people of Story County pay exclusively for the bridges through their taxes. The reality is all three of those options probably in one form or another need to become reality, and that's what we're working hard on in a comprehensive bridge plan to get it figured out over the long haul what the transportation infrastructure looks like here in Story County.
Ms. Olson, your comments?
This tags right on to the previous question about the budget in a bit. And one of the things that came up during introductory remarks is the low tax levy that we have right now. And I agree that we have to be very judicious with setting a tax levy. The tax levy, I believe, came down 16 cents in 16 cents between last year and what will go into this year, 16 cents per thousand. And I would like to add that back, and that would help cover maybe some of the very necessary repairs for some of the bridge repair. I think also we need to start assessing the bridges and setting priorities. Safety should be number one. The type of use of the bridges, in what order they're going to be repaired. And then also, is there a return on investment allowed? I do agree with Mr. Sanders. It's going to take a combination of the three that he mentioned.
Thank you. Mr. Toot, what would you like to add to that?
Well, the first thing I want to add is to make sure everybody understands that all the bridges in Story County that are currently open for use are safe. Our bridges are inspected every other year. Some of the bridges are termed structurally deficient. That doesn't mean that they're unsafe. Sometimes they have to load limit those bridges, which limits the amount of weight that can cross over those bridges. And I think we've only closed one bridge in the past 4 years, and that bridge was down by Hickory Grove Lake, and it was actually washed out. So we're currently having a discussion on that, on the future of that bridge. So funding is huge. I would like to encourage everybody to have conversations with their legislatures about the road use tax that they keep talking about and they have talked about over the past 4 years. We need to add a few cents a gallon to gasoline and diesel fuel so we can improve the infrastructure here in Story County. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Sanders, you had something additional to add?
Yeah, I wanted to underscore what Paul just said. It's not that we're having anything unsafe happen out there. And, in fact, many of our bridges get less than a dozen trips a day and in many points of the year get no trips per day, and it really becomes a farm-to-market kind of issue. Our county engineer does a great job assessing the bridges regularly and make sure that safety is first in Story County. Thanks.
Laura Solson?
I just think we should throw out a couple more numbers there to put this in perspective. Between the roads and bridge budget in Story County, we're about $1.2 million short per year of what we really need just to keep up. And a list of projects that the county engineer put before the public was about $23 million.
One more thing to add to $1 million figure that Laura's referred to is certainly not unique to Story County. There's 98 other counties in the state that are struggling with the same thing that that Story County is struggling with.
Thank you. Mr. Cleese, do you have anything to add?
I do not.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Olson, next question to you. You've criticized the Board of Supervisors for a lack of transparency and openness in their dealings. Can you please give us an example where a perceived lack of transparency impacted decision-making?
Okay, certainly. The one that comes to mind for me is dealing with the community life program. The county had to make some changes. It was owned by the county. We're in the process of now turning that over to private ownership. It has to do with the difference that the way the funding changed in the whole state for regional. The Board of Supervisors knew that they needed to look at options. Mr. Sanders said to the Board of suggested to the Board of Supervisors they go ahead and form a small group to look at these options and bring them back to the board. And instead, kind of what happened through the process is that this small work group, which was Mr. Sanders, the civil attorney, and the head of our community services department, came forward with an actual contract for $150,000, a proposed contract to go to Ireley Ball. And there was not a competitive business bidding practice, and it was not a lot. Boy, I tell you, this is a tough one.
It's a short time, I know. Wow. Mr. Toot, your reply to this?
I guess I don't know where to start. I think this board has made great strides in improving the transparency in our day-to-day operations. I've said it before. If anybody has any questions, anybody wants to know what's going on, all they need to do is call myself or one of the other two supervisors. Illustrious Monday morning meetings were eliminated after Rick and I took office, and we've instituted a liaison program, so we meet individually with our department heads and elected officials, not two or three of us at a time, to avoid any questions that way. I just don't understand what Loris's point is about this board not being transparent. I really don't see it. So, like I said, if anybody ever has any questions about what the county is up to, what we're doing, what our plans are, all they need to do is pick up the phone or come over and see any one of the three of us.
Okay. Mr. Sanders, your reply, and new information, please, not a repetition,
because
we're running a little late.
Two quick points. First of all, referring specifically to the example that Loris gave, my question would be, how would the public like the board to proceed when there's an issue? Okay, anytime you've got more than one of us working on an issue, it's a public meeting, and you really can't get to the heart of the matter. So in my mind, having one of us work with our experts to come up with a recommendation that in this case not only went to the Board of Supervisors, also went to the region for action, is exactly the way – and both of those steps happen in full view of the public. So you do the study, you gather some options, and then you come present them in the to the board and the public is exactly what should happen. Second point I've got to make is what really frustrates me about this line of argument from Loris is in 2008 when she was a member of the media, I went to her and I asked her to report on the board's Monday morning meetings, early Monday morning meetings, no minutes kept, no recording, and she felt so strongly about it at that point, she wrote exactly zero words.
Thank you. Mr. Cleese, what would you do to ensure transparency if you were elected?
Certainly. Well, obviously, if this is a point of contention between elected officials, how much more between those officials and the people they represent? I think that from what I can see, Mr. Toot and Sanders have done an excellent job of maintaining transparency, but I also completely sympathize with and agree with Ms. Olson as necessary at such time as you have a government, whether federal, state, or local, that the public does not feel they are in contact with. They feel that entity is acting of its own volition. It's a recipe for disaster. All I can do is to say that if elected, I am that going to be that supervisor that has their phone on them at all time. If you have a question, come to me. Ask me. There's nothing more transparent than that. To my understanding, most of the meetings are public as it is, and records are public as well. So it's partly a matter of information that the constituency is aware of where they can go to access that information. And then also, but more than that, that they feel that they can access that information, that they know that they have a liaison, that their representative is actually there to support them and tell them what they need to know.
And Ms. Olson has asked for rebuttal time.
Okay. I keep on hearing call me, and it is not possible for most of us in the public to call to ask for information. It's also not a constructive use of time for the supervisors most of the time. And so how you get over that issue is by you put the information out there. You put the information out there well in advance of decisions being made. Once the process gets so far along that the public can't provide, until the public provide input, it's too late. The Monday morning meetings, Rick is right, did write about, did not write about those at that time. Those meetings were our special discussion we should have. I'm sorry, 30 seconds on this topic are just
difficult. Thank you, Ms. Olson. I see Mr. Cleese had his hand up. He wanted to reply.
Certainly. I say call me because that is absolutely feasible. We all have a phone. And I say it is important and a good use of the supervisor's time because everything cannot be a top-down approach. Some of it is personal, especially in a small community. That intimate relationship with your voters is absolutely necessary, and that will transcend just the, between you two, and the word of mouth will get out and it will become known more than just between that conversation between you and your that one individual.
Mr. Sanders, 30 seconds, and then we have to go to break.
I just want to point out that there have been 3 complaints filed against this board with the Iowa Public Information Board, and all 3 of them came back as meritless. In fact, in one of them, it was pointed out by the Iowa Public Information Board that this board ran the most open and democratic process that they had heard. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take a break now and return to the debate in a moment.
To Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We're listening to a debate between the candidates for Story County Supervisor. Linda Merkin is serving as moderator. Linda, do you have your next question ready?
Yes, I do. Iowa has been criticized for having one of the more lenient statutes regarding the use of tax increment financing, also known as TIF. Can you explain why that is and tell us whether or not you agree with that criticism? What would be your criteria and process for determining use of TIF funds? Mr. Toot.
I think there has been abuses of some of the TIF funds in Iowa. One of the glaring examples is the new Von Maur store in Coralville, which is, what, a block and a half or 2 blocks away from the other Von Maur store that closed in order to build the new one. But I think here in Story County we have a good policy on our use of our TIF funds. We only take 50% of the amount of the TIF dollars that are available. We've said all along that we're open to suggestions from the township officials and the school officials who are affected by the use of our use of the TIF funds, and I think we've made good use of the TIF funds here in Story County, and I'm proud of the things that we've been able to do with our TIF funds.
Mr. Cleese,
you asked for you said lenient measures.
One of the more lenient statutes regarding the use of TIF funds.
Certainly, I think that. Since it is being collected from people that are using county property, since it's direct income for the county, there should be a fairly large amount of autonomy in how the county elects to spend that. However, you know, obviously it's not good to appropriate every single dollar to one particular cause. From what I understand, the majority of it comes from the wind towers in Story County, and at this point it's been used chiefly for educational purposes. I have no problems with that. However, if there are alternative methods that we can use, such as allowing the state to sponsor some of those TIF funds for the school, and then we use it otherwise, I think that would be very beneficial, especially for infrastructure and public works projects.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Olson.
Okay. Just to clarify what tax incremental financing TIF is, it's when you go in and you put a special kind of overlay taxation toward, like, the county. You take funds from future development that would normally go to the school districts or the other taxing authorities, and you instead put that into special projects to enhance. I've covered TIF at its very core of economic development when it's been successful. In general, I think that what happens is when people get too loose and liberal with it. I think the county has been judicious in using those tax incremental financing funds. Where we've maybe gone a little bit over outside of the realm has been in using it for something like Dakin's Lake, because there isn't a direct return there on the dollar investment. But I think in the community of Zeering, there is that direct return. I would like to use TIF financing for affordable housing projects.
Thank you. Mr. Toot?
I think Paul already went.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
You.
Yeah,
I apologize. Mr. Sanders.
Tax increment financing is a tool. And, Linda, back to your original question, are the rules too lenient in the state? Yeah, they are. That's why you see abuses like Paul talked about between Coralville and Iowa City. So we took the additional step of putting further restrictions on us as a Board of Supervisors in what we could and could not do with TIF. And we're, in fact, the most restrictive in the state. Of any county that's using TIF, we've got the most restrictive rules. We do things like, we say none of the dollars can go to a private entity. It has to be for public good. The things like Dakin's Lake, I believe, are a completely, while creative, a completely appropriate use, because it's taken a little town like Zeering and brought it back. Anybody who's not been to Zeering in the last 5 years needs to go.
Any rebuttals? Lars?
I guess I would just like to add, as I said, and Mr. Sanders did a good job of describing why the Dakin's Lake project has benefit. I think it has benefit. Plus, it was used up in the northeast part of the county where, in fact, the majority of the wind farms are located. So at least it was distributed back there. Tax incremental financing, I know many people object to it, but we have this unique situation because the wind farms themselves are in, they're generating income, and they don't require a lot of input, a lot of financial input from us.
Thank you. Next question. Numerous studies have shown that CAFOs, or concentrated animal feeding operations, can negatively affect the health and well-being of residents as well as neighboring property values. In 2012, after a proposal for a CAFO to be sited near Hickory Grove was withdrawn because of opposition, the county supervisors pledged to take special precautions when reviewing a proposed hog confinement to be sited near a body of water. Mr. Sanders, this last spring you spoke in favor of approving a CAFO with a barely passing master matrix score. This proposed CAFO is located at the headwaters of Indian Creek, where the water flow is extremely volatile. Do you feel like you went back on your pledge from the earlier year?
Yeah, thanks, Linda. Absolutely not. First of all, barely passing is passing. And secondly, we don't get to set the rules for what is passing and even whether a permit is issued. That's all done by the DNR. What the county gets to do is be the receiver of comment and then make a recommendation. And Story County goes beyond, again, what any other county does in notifying residents within 2 miles. We don't have to do that. In holding a public hearing, we don't have to do that. In one CAFO, we did a roadshow. We went down for an evening meeting in Collins so that the residents could show up and really give their opinion. We go through and make sure that everybody gets to have their say, and then we all vote on where we think the recommendation is. For me, it was simple. It passed. It met the master matrix score, and therefore in the state of Iowa, that's a buildable CAFO. Thanks.
Mr. Toot, do you have anything to add to what Mr. Sanders said?
I think we do a very good job here in Story County of our CAFO processes. We've, I think, probably approved maybe six in the last 4 years. Three of those were expansions of existing facilities, two cattle and one hog facility, and I think we've done three new ones. Our environmental health department is probably as involved, if not more involved, than any other environmental health department in the state. I know Margaret James, our director, or a member of her staff, has been out several times to the Chumblin site northwest of Nevada and met with the owner and the operator out there, and she's reported back that she believes, as far as she can tell, that things are proceeding the way that they're intended to proceed.
Mr. Cleese, how would you have acted in this matter and why?
Well, I will reiterate what Mr. Sanders said. If a line – the line has to be drawn somewhere as to what is acceptable and what is not. To say that it barely passed and was allowed to go is the same as, saying you're driving 65 in a 65. Well, you're barely not speeding, but yet you aren't. So I would make that analogy to say that we would not be the ones that are responsible for determining where that line is drawn. It is only to arbitrate whether that should go forward. If it passes, it passes. If the consensus from the public is that that's what they want with when all things are taken into consideration, then it's really not within the ambit of your authority to say otherwise.
Mr. Olson, you were at the hearing. What's your take on
yes.
it?
Yes. Well, the consensus of the public at that hearing was that they did not want it to pass. I originally was asked what would I have done, and I said I would have forwarded it without a recommendation. However, then at the League of Women Voters Forum, Mr. Toot provided new information that said, oh, no, we had to send it one way or the other. So my vote would have been no. It was so close, within 500 feet. I think the fact that this will be a successful project for everyone rests a lot with the Chemlins themselves, and their willingness to work with the county and to be open. I think that the Board of Supervisors in general, would need to sit down and discuss, do we want to take some activism down at the state level in addition to what the association is taking right now, and lobby for maybe some changes in how the matrix is scored. Thank you.
Mr. Sanders, you
have any... just want to point out, both Paul and Laura's mentioned the Chumblins. The Chumblins are fifth-generation farmers here in Story County who followed the law. They did exactly what they were supposed to do. And so anybody who wants to – if you want to vilify the Board of Supervisors or the DNR or whatever, that's appropriate. But to vilify one of our citizens who just followed the law is not appropriate. I would encourage everybody to be really, really careful with that.
Okay, we'll go on to the next question. Thank you. Several Iowa counties have taken steps to reform the structure of county government. In 2011, the Story County Task Force on Restructuring recommended that we do the same. Two recommendations were made of major importance. One was moving to a 5-member Board of Supervisors, which would change the role of the county supervisors to policymaking and would hire a professional, qualified county manager to administer county operations. Another was merging the offices of recorder and auditor, reducing costs, gaining efficiency by doing that. My understanding is that the supervisors could place the first recommendation on the ballot for the voters to consider and could themselves have acted on the second recommendation. Mr. Sanders, you originally supported the 5-member county board. Why has nothing happened with either of these recommendations, and did you change your mind, and if so, why?
No, I still support five members on the board. I think it's a better number. Linda, I have to correct one thing you just said as part of that question. That was not two recommendations from the County Government Restructuring Committee. It was one in total recommendation. In fact, if you go back and listen to the audio, which I've done on a couple of occasions, at 54 minutes into the audio, if you're willing to get that far, Ted Tedesco very clearly says, let me be clear, we are not recommending moving to 5 supervisors by district. We're recommending that as part of a total process. I clarified it about an hour and 19 minutes. I said, Ted, I just want to be sure we're clear. Do you want this board, does this committee want this board to take any action on the 5 supervisors? He said no. Second thing I'll point out is that on a survey, really limited survey, not because of lack of effort, but just because that was a reality, 63% of the respondents said they want to stay at 3 supervisors in Story County. I feel strongly about 5. I feel more strongly that I represent the people of Story County, and I should listen to what they're telling me.
Okay. Let's just keep it with the Board of Supervisors question because we're running out of time. So, Mr. Cleese, where would you stand on a five-member Board of Supervisor, and would you act on that if you were elected?
Well, I guess I can't say I have a particularly strong opinion. I think a common, detraction would be that, you know, there's too many chiefs and not enough Indians. A very valid point that I believe Mr. Toot made at the League of Women Voters was that if you have perhaps part-time supervisors or a greater number, and it's a lower number to make quorum, it's going to perhaps encourage them to not show up, whereas with three, when it's requisite that all three be there to come to a consensus, I think that solidifies the necessity for all of your elected officials being in the same room at the same time making decisions as they're supposed to. But I would need more contextual information to, I guess, give substantial support for or against five supervisors. At this point, I don't have an opinion.
Ms. Olson, same question to you.
Well, that the thought of an elected official not showing up for a meeting on a regular basis because they didn't have to just terrifies me, whether it be 3, 5, or 200. Back to, though, I very strongly support five supervisors going to making policymaking and a professional manager. And I think the number one reason for that is that we need a broader representation of the citizens on the board itself when it comes to gender makeup, when it comes to life experiences, when it comes to age. And the way we are structured right now with asking supervisors to do both administrative duties and policymaking duties is that we eliminate a lot of people from running for the board because of the perceived time constraints. I think also then what we've got is that five are more voices at the table, more ideas come forward. Five, it gives you a broader, you need to develop a broader consensus, so domination is less easy.
Thank you. Mr. Toot.
Thank you. This issue comes up every 2 years during the election cycle for the Board of Supervisors, and then it goes away and you don't hear much about it after that. In Story County, we've got three full-time supervisors elected at large. I pledge to serve full-time. The other two supervisors that are currently in office serve full-time. If you want to go to a five-person part-time board, that's exactly what you're going to get. You're going to get part-time administrators. I've talked to several other supervisors in different counties who have gone from three to five and have regretted the decision that they made or that the voters made. If they have trouble with quorums, members not showing up for the vote, if they're elected by district, the person in that district is only concerned about what happens in that district, and they're not concerned countywide. So,
Ms. Olson, you had a rebuttal?
Yes, I did. I've attended the Iowa Association of County spring and fall meetings for the last couple of years, and I've talked to supervisors from other counties also. And I have heard from some who are three-member, one in particular who lost one of their members, who wished they had been at five because it was getting difficult to get things done. And that's why you need a county manager with the five so that as far as administrative duties, everything is getting done.
Thank you.
There's no such thing as a county manager in county government. The other elected officials don't report to the Board of Supervisors. If you're trying to create a system where you've got a Steve Shanker, as Ames does, it doesn't work under Code 331 in the state of Iowa because a county manager has no teeth at all to be able to do anything. Second thing I'll say is one of us up here actually tried to put on the ballot at one point five supervisors, and it died for lack of a second. That was me. And the third thing is this is in the hands of the people of Story County who, if they want it, can simply force it onto the ballot by a petition drive, which is how it's happened in the places Paul refers to where it's grown. It's gone from a citizen-led drive, and that's what should happen in Story County if it's a big deal.
Okay. We have time for one more question, but we have just 60 seconds and no rebuttal, please, because we're getting close. Has the reorganization of Iowa's mental health services actually expanded access to services for people in need, or has it just changed governing structures? Do you have any specific examples of individuals who suffer from mental illness being served better? What would you like to see changed about the system? If so, how are you working, or how would you work to affect that change? Ms. Olson.
As far as in Story County, I believe that we will find that much of it has just changed the regional structure of it. And I believe that it's a very good region. I've attended most of the meetings for our new region. And I think for the Story County citizens, they're going to find the same services they always had. Statewide, I think some services, some citizens are getting expanded services. The difference has to do with how they're being delivered, who will fund those, or how they're being funded. The taxpayers are still funding those services. I think our community life program, we're going to, those particular people who are served by that are going to see some changes, but we don't know what they're going to be yet. There's a strong commitment from both the region and from this Board of Supervisors to try to transition most of those services.
Mr. Sanders.
I was not a proponent of the regional system. I actually worked hard against the idea of Story County moving into a regional system, but the state made the call and Story County became part of a region, and I think I can I'm happy to sit here and agree with Loris that we're part of a really, really good region. I've been really, really pleased with where it was where it's headed. My concern is more with legislating to the lowest common denominator, and that is here in Story County, traditionally, Story County has been way, way, way ahead of the curve in the state in how we deal with mental health issues. And my fear now is that when you try to make everybody do exactly the same thing, sometimes you bring the top down as well as bringing the bottom up. And we're at the top. I don't want to see Story County go down at all.
Thank you. Mr. Cleese?
From what I understand, it has not affected the actual quality of services nor the number of services that are provided, but rather, as they all said, it's kind of a recapitulation. It has only affected the structure. I firmly believe that it would be in our best interest to work closely with the state legislature to return as much autonomy as possible to that. It may be going well now, but we can only speculate on how it will go in the future. The county is going to be the best situated to know the needs of its own, just as the state is best situated to know the needs of the state. I think that we'll be in a lot more closer touch with what actual Story County residents are going to need in terms of healthcare services, and that something is lost when that is determined and provided by a more distant entity.
Okay. Thank you. Did I miss anybody on that? Mr. Toot, yes.
Thank you. One of the main reasons that the state decided to go to a regional system was to, as they said, level the playing field. There were a lot of areas in Iowa that weren't seeing the services. Their citizens weren't seeing the services that they needed. And the reason that the regional concept came up was to make all services available, similar services available statewide. I think Story County has always done a good job, an excellent job, serving their mental health community. And we, as part of the region, 10 county region, we're going to continue to make sure that the services are available that that our citizens in need require. Thank you.
Thank you. We're now going to go to closing statements, and that can allow everybody, if you got cut off, if you didn't get to say something you wanted to, you can get that in. I would also encourage you to say, why are you running, or why are you running again, and distinguish yourself from your opponents. Why would you – I think you get the idea. Okay. Let me start with Paul Toot.
Thank you. Like I said at the beginning, I'm very proud of what we've been able to accomplish here in Story County over the past 4 years, and I'm running for reelection to continue those successes. It's very important that you have a Board of Supervisors that's mindful of the taxpayers' money and mindful of the services that those monies provide. I think we've done an excellent job here in Story County with those services, and I pledge to continue to serve the citizens in Story County in a full-time manner and be the key keeper for the tax pot. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cleese.
I will say, just restate, I guess, what I have said from the outset. Observing my own generation and those that immediately surround it, I see a very strong disillusionment and disenchantment with our political process, from federal to all the way down to local, such as county government. That is problematic. Once you have a citizenry that becomes frustrated and feels that it serves no purpose. They become apathetic. And when you become apathetic, then ignorance is the subsequent byproduct of that. Folks, we're going to eventually – my generation is going to assume responsibility for our country's future, both from the local, from the micro to the macro. And I guess I feel very compelled to stand up and lead to perhaps reinstill some faith in government to create a new wave, a new generation of leadership within the county that – I mean, it's a springboard for something more. And I'm happy to do that. If I can serve in any capacity in the community I reside in, then I feel that's my civic duty and obligation.
Thank you. Mr. Sanders.
Well, thank you for having us today. It's been a real treat to be here. I love serving on this Board of Supervisors. I love working with Paul Toot and Wayne Clinton. And the reality is, I started with it, I'll end with it, results matter. They just do. And if you look at this board, we don't always agree. I mean, the reality is the three of us have entirely different backgrounds and largely different views politically. But we find ways to work together for the good of Story County. We don't kick decisions down the road. We do a great job planning. We have dealt with so much. Paul's 100% right. We are really, really good stewards of the public dollars, but we still make sure that those services that are necessary and demanded by the people of Story County are provided. I'm running for re-election because I love serving on this board, because I love the job that we've done. I'm really, really proud of it, and I ask for your vote for another 4 years to keep Story County moving in the direction it's moved the last 4 years. Thank you.
Ms. Olson?
Story County government has changed since my two opponents were elected, and I agree with 80% of what has been done, and I agree with the majority of the outcomes. As you can tell with me, it's about process. It's about opening it up to the citizenry early. It's about effective, broad communication, and it is about making certain that the dialogue occurs always at the board table, including the beginning dialogues, not just the end dialogues. So I'm asking you to elect me to the board to go ahead and add that element that is, I believe, not there right now. Transparency is a government unit telling you what they've done after they've done it. And I will give the example of a vote in January when they came out of closed session, which was perfectly allowable, on a lawsuit issue. And a motion was made that rather than naming the dollar amount of the settlement agreement and the person who would be receiving that dollar amount, the motion was made to direct counsel to go ahead and handle that matter. And it's hard for me to argue that transparency is there when a motion on a very clearly defined topic could not include the details. And I invite people to go to my website, laurisolson.com, to read more, because this is complicated. Thank you.
This has been an election debate among the four candidates for Story County Supervisor. We just heard the closing arguments of all four candidates. It has been a very informative, engaging debate, and we thank all of you candidates for coming to the station to share information with our listeners. And Linda, thank you for moderating.
It was my pleasure.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Today's show featured a debate between the four candidates running for Story County Supervisor. Our guest moderator was Linda Merkin. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. This debate was taped live on Monday at 7 a.m. If you're catching the early show, tell your friends to catch it later at noon or at 7 p.m. Or they can find it online under our archived shows at our website, khoifm.org. Just follow the Listen Here button and look for Monday's Local Talk. Thanks to Greta Anderson, Linda Merkin, for their help producing the show. I've been your host, Kay Putter. Rick Morrison has been our engineer. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music played was from the group Shady Rill, which you can also hear on Thursday on Heart of Iowa. You can hear a whole show with Shady Rill. Here at KHOI, we seek to build community through communication. If there's something you'd like to hear more of on our show, let us know. Your participation as listeners is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.